This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. A big thanks to our first guest of the day, Kelly Bidlin, joining us in studio, part of the Long Shots team here at VSiN. Both he, Wes Reynolds, Matt Brown, all have their plays up online at VSiN.com. In about a half hour, we'll check in. Actually, in 15 minutes, we'll check in with Jared Smith, one of our VSiN analysts, talking the college football Big Ten conference this year, Penn State in particular, as well as some Major League Baseball for later on today. But right now, let's transition into the NFL. Our preview for today, it's the San Francisco 49ers, one of the more intriguing teams of this offseason. You and I have yet to talk about just how we view the overall perception, you know, kind of compared to reality here, where you have a quarterback in Brock Purdy who rises to prominence last year, then gets injured. And with all the amazing parts on that team, the big question is quarterback. And so with a team that now comes back, favored to win the NFC West, what do you make of this Niners team entering 23?
I love this team. I think they're one of really four to five teams that can win the Super Bowl. I think them and Philadelphia are head and shoulders above everybody in the NFC. I know people point to the fact that Brock Purdy's coming off the UCL surgery and how much of an impact could that have on him in terms of what he's able to do. But to me, Ben, when you look at this Niners team, they are the deepest team in football from a talent standpoint, minus the quarterback position. Nobody else comes close to them. Just real quickly, just looking at the roster, okay, you've got Kittle at tight end. He's if you go by the ESPN Plus rankings on executives, coaches, and scouts, where they rank these guys, he's rated number two. Trent Williams rated number one. Christian McCaffrey at running back rated number one. Rated number two behind Nick Chubb. Nick Bosa one. Fred Warner number one. This team is loaded. I mean, this team is unbelievable. I haven't even mentioned arguably the best weapon in football, which is Debo Samuel, whether you put him in the tailback position, the wide receiver position. Brandon Ayuk is criminally underrated in terms of what he's able to do. Juwan Jennings has been a nice receiver for this team. I absolutely love this team. And, you know, that didn't even mention, not to mention Elijah Mitchell as a backup. He's a great running back as well. To me, they could put about 20 guys at quarterback in San Francisco, and this team still got a chance to win the Super Bowl.
Everything to me, like every box is checked. Even the quarterback in Brock Purdy, I don't have the same concerns that other people do, because in that system, with as much pre-snap motion that Kyle Shanahan uses, I still have been making the argument, and I went down, I bet heavily on the Niners in that NFC Championship game loss to Philadelphia, but Brock Purdy gets rid of the ball a half second earlier on that first drive of the game. I still believe San Francisco goes out and beats Philadelphia. Of course, the whole tenor changes when Purdy gets knocked out. Yeah. Game flips. Niners didn't have a quarterback. But I think the one concern you would probably have is offensive line, right? Where with Trent Williams being back at left tackle, the rest of that group has been somewhat untested. And like PFF ranks them 18th best offensive line in football. It's probably accurate to say about a mid-tier group, where the rest I view as elite across their positions.
I'll tell you why I don't put that much stock in PFF's grades. Some of the players and the way they rank them, and then you see some of the contracts that they get signed in the offseason, obviously they're looking at something different than general managers, scouts, and teams. So for me, I kind of throw it out the window. You're right. If you're going to point to a little bit of a weakness, it might be there. Offensive line is probably their second biggest issue. Cornerback, they lose Jimmy Ward. I think he went to Houston as a free agent. I think he wound up there. But overall, one other thing I didn't mention, they add in Javon Hargrave. Now, I'm not necessarily ready to sign off with you in the NFC Championship game where if Purdy doesn't get hurt, that the Niners win.
I get it's a bit of an overstatement.
No, it's not necessarily. I think they're both very competitive. I think they're head and shoulders above everyone else. But to me, where San Francisco is slightly better now than the Philadelphia Eagles is, not only do you get a top defensive tackle in a Hargrave, but you get someone that you take away a centerpiece from the Philadelphia Eagles, sure, your biggest competition at this point in time. And then you get a healthy Eric Armstead. You've got Drake Jackson on that defensive front. Look, with McCaffrey's ability to run the ball, and I love the fact that Shanahan's one of these smart coaches that runs the ball constantly, this team is right there. I mean, let's be real here. They were 60 minutes away from winning the Super Bowl. And against Kansas City a couple of years ago, I mean, they're a big
one pass.
Exactly. This team is right there. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have done a tremendous job of assembling the team that they have. I think they've got a great shot. I'm a little bit surprised by these odds we're looking at DraftKings right now. Niners are 4.25 to win the NFC. I love these odds on this team. Everyone wants to talk Seattle. Ben, if you break down the three times they played the Hawks last year, the first half in the playoff game, they had a lead. It was a minor lead against the 49ers. The Seahawks did. It was their best half of football out of the six halves of football that they played against the 49ers. San Francisco destroyed them in the second half. Seattle gets a late garbage touchdown. They dominated the other four halves when they played them in the regular season. Seattle's not on the 49ers level. People, please continue to bet the Seahawks all day, every day. Don't stop. I mean, to me, I find it to be absurd. Yes, the receiving core is good. Fine, if you like Geno Smith. Geno Smith was terrible for about the first 7 years of his career. But San Francisco is just a different level team compared to the Seattle Seahawks. This team right now, with adding Hargrave, with Nick Bosa going to get a big-time contract, this team, to me, I would make them the favorite to win the NFC despite the uncertainty at quarterback. Here's the other thing. Trey Lance is a guy that could potentially give you something that you don't expect. Anything you get out of him is a bonus. If he's in short yarded situations to be able to run the ball with McCaffrey back there, with Debo Samuel, you imagine you line that up there with Lance, Debo, and Christian McCaffrey? Forget about it.
Yeah. Well, it's such a good point, because the general consensus in the way we process Trey Lance because of how high he was drafted is, well, if he's not a starting quarterback on your franchise, then it's a total busted and a wasted pick. Whereas, Is it this the one team where, knowing the uncertainties about Lance, and we have no idea still as far as the recovery from his injury is going, even if the reports are positive, isn't he the perfect guy? Like, isn't San Francisco the perfect team for a guy like Lance, who is still limited in his growth as a quarterback, but can still contribute in a lot of different ways than he could have, say, he was thrown in on the Detroit Lions this year or the Atlanta Falcons?
Excellent point. When you look at McCaffrey, you look at Debo Samuel, whether he's lined up in the backfield or on the perimeter, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle. George Kittle's got to be the best run after catch player in the NFL after contact. Travis Kelce's probably as good as anybody in terms of catching the ball and getting upfield, but Kittle's a guy you have a hard time bringing down, and he's a much better inline blocker than Travis Kelce is. To me, you're absolutely right. It's a much better situation and circumstance for him to be in than some other team, just simply based on the talent that they have around him. Now, I will tell you one under-the-radar loss that they have for this team is Robbie Gould. Robbie Gould is an incredibly accurate kicker. The leg strength was no longer there outside of the 45-yard line, but I still think Robbie Gould is a kicker that was extremely beneficial for this team. When you look at when you needed a field goal in a pressure situation, is one of those, been there, done that for a long time. I mean, this team gets to play the Rams twice, the Cardinals twice. They do play Minnesota, which won't be easy, but again, that's a home game. This is a team right now, to me, that's in a great position. They should have a fantastic season. The game December 3rd at the Link in Philadelphia will be crucial to potentially seeing which team gets home field advantage. Season win total over under 10.5 at -145. I promise you one thing. They will not have a loss in the schedule this year the way they did against the Bears in week one. This team is far better. The season win total is at 10.5. So somebody out there thinks the Niners are going 10-7.
Seven losses. Yeah.
I mean, who made that total? Mike Nolan? Somebody who was fired by the Niners? Jim Harbaugh? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Tell me why the San Francisco 49ers, who talent-wise, if you are any GM, you say, take away Patrick Mahomes, just give me the Niners roster. They have the best roster in football minus the quarterback position. I've said that many times. It's not even close. They have 6 to 7 players that are in the top 2 or 3 in the NFL at their respective positions.
I was expecting you to go with a Jim Tom Sula reference, but you let me down. That's okay. That Mike Nolan, not a bad, any guy who wears a suit on the sideline.
Don't make fun of him. I would probably show up in a suit.
I didn't hate it at the time either. If you're talking about concerns for San Francisco, mention some of the issues with durability on the offensive line. It's a team that in general, for whatever reason, them all under head coach Kyle Shanahan, has had a lot of injuries. They've been a very banged up team. And they have a lot of weird scheduling spots this year. They have 3 different weeks where their opponent is coming off a bye, including 1 week where they're playing on a short week off Monday Night Football. I believe it's that Cincinnati game where the Bengals are off a bye. So I don't know how much stock you put into those short weeks, and just and in general, not the specific spot, but just how it is extrapolated over the course of a regular season, and how if at all, based on the history there with some injuries, based on some of those tough scheduling spots, it would worry you at any point as far as that win total goes.
Well, look, if you lose to the Bengals at home, it's not the worst thing in the world. Number one, Cincinnati's one of those teams that I would consider for the Super Bowl. The other thing is, and a lot of people at VSiN, I think, 75% of the people in the guide picked the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. Great team this year. However, to me, they're non-conference, so it doesn't really hurt you big picture-wise. Yes, you never want to have a loss, but overall, when you look at this thing, they've got to win that game against the Eagles. They've got the Seahawks at home in late December. They do play in Seattle earlier in the year. I'm just trying to see the exact date in which they play the Seahawks. Actually, they play twice in 3 weeks, November 23rd. They play on Thanksgiving night up in Seattle. So that'll be a raucous crowd. But they've got a three-week stretch where if they beat the Hawks, beat the Eagles, and here's the advantage. Remember, they play on Thanksgiving, And then they'll have an additional 3 days before they play the Eagles in Philadelphia. So I like where this team is at. They've got a great opportunity this year. This team, to me, is going to be somewhere in that 13 to 14 win range.
And it's one of those things where, because so much of the focus, and you think about national narrative, is on the quarterback, how important that position is to a team. I believe, and we agree on this point, Amal, that because of that, the strength of the rest of that roster does not get talked about enough. And as a result, in the betting market, it's why you see a win total like a 10.5 out there. That probably should be a flat 11, if we're being honest. 10.5 right now, minus 145 on that over. That wraps up our first hour on the show here on VSiN Sharp Money. We'll talk a little baseball, a little college football with our guy Jared Smith, VSiN analyst, on the other side, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are lots of sounds that you might hear. You could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, the sound of first responders desperately trying to save you. You could even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral, because if you drive over the speed limit, you could do damage that's beyond repair. One way or another, speeding catches up with you, paid for by NHTSA. We're back on Sharp Money. Big thanks to Jared Smith for stopping by with his college football yes run, no run first inning thoughts on Major League Baseball, as well as Kelly Bidlin from a little bit earlier on the golf, U.S. The Open Championship, 151st Open, starting tonight. And we'll have Zach Cohen coming on the mall in about 45 minutes. Excited for a combo. We'll get a little U.S. Open tennis futures thoughts, as well as some NBA thoughts for this upcoming season. But right now, ready for this Big 12 preview? Let's do it. All right, Texas, Oklahoma, they are your favorites to enter the 2023-24 season atop that Big 12 conference. Texas plus 105, OU plus 340. And it is interesting from that perspective, Amal, where we talked earlier about how the head-to-head win total, minus 110 for each. Granted, this is winning the actual Big 12 title game. But it is interesting to me, Amal, that you have such a divide there on the odds board when they are basically a pick 'em as far as the head-to-head win totals this year.
Yeah, I mean, it really is surprising when you see the numbers right now. Texas plus 105, OU plus 340, and then you go K-State 5-1, and then go double digits with everyone else in the league. But, you know, Oklahoma State's always done well when there's not much expected from them. I'm not saying that the Cowboys are going to have a big year. But Texas, look, this is a team that's got an opportunity to really have a great season. And I'll tell you what, Ben, you're going to see and get an idea of what the Horns can be, and the expectations could change drastically if they pull out a victory in Tuscaloosa in the second weekend of the season. That game, September, I think it's September 9th, is going to be the marquee game of that weekend. And it's really going to be a measuring stick game from Texas. Last year, if Ewers doesn't get hurt in that game, I believe they beat Alabama. But different situation, different story now going on the road to Tuscaloosa.
And that's probably why, for those of you wondering, okay, why are the odds so different when the win total are the same, or the win total head-to-head is the same? And that's largely because of that non-con for Texas, where you go to T-Town and Alabama. And we've seen there's been a lot of respected money come in the Heisman market, them all, on Quinn Ewers. He's been bet down to about 12-1. There have been all the off-season workout videos where nobody ever looks out of shape in the summer workout videos there, of all. So how much stock do you put into all the hype we're getting around Ewers now that he's back for another year?
Well, look, I think he's pretty good, and it was funny. You know, he wanted to be given a guarantee he was going to start a sophomore year at Ohio State. That's why he transferred. It's like, dude, you got a guy with the number two pick in the draft. Let's see if you can get to that level first. But nobody's going to post a photo of them looking like they're, you know, 40 lbs overweight, and they look like they should miss their next 18 meals.
I think Eddie Lacy's the only one who's ever had a off-season photo posted of him that looked unflattering.
I don't remember.
It was one of the Packer workout. Wyatt remembers very well, where he looked like he had he'd been sitting on the couch nonstop.
Unfortunately, he got the nickname Cheeseburger Eddie after that.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. He was
those
good
cheese at curds hit different.
He was good at Alabama. He just was not a guy that the scouts really valued, because we saw how much success the Alabama running backs have had in the NFL, but just never really materialized in Green Bay either.
I was at a Mizzou Alabama game where I'm pretty sure I could have ran Eddie Lacy first play from scrimmage 75 yards to the house, and it was a downpour, so I left immediately after that play. I just wanted to see Alabama in person, but I could have ran through the hole that O-line created for him.
I think Eddie Lacy played in the game when they beat Notre Dame in the national championship down in the Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have driven Mack trucks through some of those lines we saw.
Yeah. No doubt. Anyway, that gets aside from the point here, because Quinn Ewers does look in shape. Texas looks to be really strong. 9.5 on the win total for Texas this year. As far as Oklahoma, so we talked earlier, Maul, you like Texas in that head-to-head matchup. As far as the overall season win total, Texas, OU, they're basically evenly priced, -110. As Oklahoma comes in, +340 on the odds board. And you think about Brent Venables, it was a shaky up and down first year as head coach. I remember talking to you last summer, Amal, and you thought that the talent Oklahoma had would kind of help Brent Venables in his transition in year one. It wouldn't, the lack of experience, so to speak, at the head coaching position wouldn't necessarily be a negative mark. What do you make now that he's back for year two, and now that roster still looks to be in a position to contend for the Big 12, even if they are second on the odds board?
Well, first of all, I like Dylan Gabriel, the transfer from UCF. He got hurt last year, didn't play consistently well. My concern is a little bit with the backfield. They still have some talent there. Gavin Sauchuk, really good, really talented. Marcus Major as well. But they lose on the perimeter. You lose Marvin Mims. Drake Stoops is back. It feels like for his 15th year. But I'll tell you one thing. Drake Stoops is tough in that slot. He gets open. He can always find the little gap in the defense. If they can get him utilized, he should have a big season for the Sooners. Offensive line is generally a sturdy place for Oklahoma. I have some concerns and question marks there. But overall, I think Venables, as he continues his time in Norman, the defense is going to be good. They got a transfer in Deshaun McCullough from Indiana. This was a kid who was supposed to go to Ohio State, ended up going to Indiana because his dad was on the staff at IU. Transfers out of IU. He's going to be big time for them in the linebacker position. Sophomore transfer. I think he should have an immediate impact for them. This is a team that needs to get off to a fast start, and it's very capable. Arkansas State, SMU, who offensively is always solid. Tulsa in a game in state, which is a bit of a rivalry game for Tulsa playing Big Brother. And that game is in Tulsa. At Cincinnati as well. Remember, that's a conference game now with the Bearcats joining the Big 12. Iowa State. And then, of course, that first Saturday in October. I'm going to tell you, I said this yesterday or 2 days ago. If you're a college football fan, and I know a lot of fans do this, they go to South Bend for a game, or they go to other places. The best game in college football, and I covered college football for a long time. If you're a neutral observer and you want to go to game, without question, the best game is Texas OU at the State Fair. I mean, you've got half the stadium is crimson and cream, burnt orange on the other side. It's usually about a 75-degree day in Dallas at 11 o'clock kickoff. It genuinely doesn't get any better than that in college football. And it's such a great rivalry for people that don't know. Oklahoma is actually closer to Dallas than Austin is. And in, you look at this, these are the two marquee programs in the Big 8 and the Big 12 for a long, long time. But to me, that's going to be the measuring stick game. The rest of the schedule is manageable. And the one challenge, and I think what benefits Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12, is they don't play these games on campus. In the Big 12, because a lot of the stadiums at Iowa State, at Cincinnati, at Stillwater, in Kansas State, they're not as big. You don't end up in those environments where you can't hear, where you can't audible. It's a huge advantage for teams that are so offensively driven in this league. I think Sooners have a good chance to really be there, but we'll find out who they are on September 7th in Dallas.
No question, and that's why Oklahoma right now, +340, second fiddle to Texas on the preseason odds board at +105. What do you make of the championship game winner from last year in K-State, where they have this dream season under head coach Chris Klieman, come back now 5-1 of the Wildcats as that third choice to win the conference?
Yeah. Will Howard's back under center for this team at the quarterback position. You look at this team overall, though, they're very good, very solid. The one concern I have is, can they be consistent in the tight, tough games? They've got a ton of guys back defensively. They lose a ton of guys on defense. They lose 7 starters or 6 starters on defense. That's an area I have concern with. Offensively, they should be solid. They're going to play their game. They're going to do what they want to do. They're going to pick their spots in terms of where they throw the football. But I think this is a dangerous team. And Klieman's one of the best coaches around. They've got Trayshawn Ward, the transfer from Florida State, who's going to be the tailback for them, Ben. I like this team. They're not a bad bet at 5-1. And when you look at the Power 5 right now, outside of the Pac-12, I think Kansas State is probably one of your better bets at 5-1 that's got odds better than 3-1 on a team to win a league. Well, I think they're very dangerous.
Just think about how and we'll get into in our second segment, because we'll do two segments here on the Big 12 with all the additional teams coming in that we'll see for the first time in that conference. But in general, when you think of the Big 12, you think high-powered, air raid offenses, high-scoring affairs. In K-State, I've always gotten the sense, especially this goes back to the Bill Snyder days and especially since Chris Klieman has taken over as head coach, such a uniquely difficult team to prepare for when you think about the context of the rest of the Big 12 slate. And I don't know how that generally gets priced in them all, but sometimes it's one of those things that you can't really factor that in your numbers. But to me, it's always a big factor that we generally don't talk about enough.
No, I would agree with you. I think it's a really good point. When you go into Manhattan, sometimes the wind can be a factor. You have tremendous wind gust in that part of the country as you get into later October and November. But you're right. They're not a traditional type of team. When you think about Oklahoma offensively, Texas Tech, what you see out of them, Oklahoma State, these teams want to spread you out, get the ball on the perimeter, go big plays when the opportunities present themselves. I like the schedule. Remember they had Missouri last year at home? I thought it was one of the cheapest prices on the line we had seen all year. You got SEMO. You open up with SEMO. You've got Troy. Trojans are always competitive, but this is a game K-State should win. They go down to Como. I think this is a game, Ben, they should win this one. And then you get to start, get the test. UCF at home, I like them in that spot. But then you got a bye. You go to Stillwater at Lubbock. Even when the Red Raiders aren't particularly strong, it's always tough going into Lubbock. The schedule on the back half becomes a little bit more challenging. Texas, November 4th in Austin. That's always a competitive game with those two teams. You close out with Iowa State. So a pretty good schedule for this team. You miss Oklahoma. You get the Horns in Austin, which depending on where Texas is mentally at that point in time, I think Kansas State's a really, really dangerous team and not a bad play at all, 5-1. Ben, one other factor is, remember, the Big 12 is going to take the two teams with the best record. There's no divisional pairing.
Yep.
So it gives you an advantage if they get to the conference championship game. No team in this league is going to be more than a 7-point favorite over anyone else in Jerry World. So you've got an opportunity to take the other side on the money line, even if it's a higher price.
Yeah, and even just if you wanted to bet the win total, you're getting, at least at DraftKings, you're getting plus 140 on an over 8.5.
Yeah, I think that's a very manageable number. Yeah. 9 wins for Kleiman's team when you look at the non-con, very, very manageable. They should go undefeated in the non-conference schedule. And the one problem right now in the Big 12 is the lack of consistency from defensive sides of the ball for most teams. That's where I think Kansas State becomes even more dangerous. Sure. They're going to play fundamentally the way they want to. Will Howard coming back helps this team immensely.
Especially having a quarterback in that system who is used to what they want to run. A big thing for Kansas State coming back. 5-1 is the third favorites. When we return, we'll talk about the two teams that are on K-State's schedule right below them in the odds board. Texas Tech, TCU. Is them all buying the Red Raiders or Horned Frogs? Then we'll talk about the newcomers into the conference. Interesting year for UCF, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston. What do we expect out of those teams in 2023? That's next as our Big 12 preview continues on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. By the way, Amal, two games down on the MLB slate for today. Two home dogs, two overs cash, and the latest in Baltimore. How about this? If the Texas Rangers can hold on to a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the eighth against the Rays, after Baltimore beats LA 8-5, pounded the Dodgers' Julio Urias, 8 earned runs in 5 innings, Baltimore will be tied for first in the AL East if that holds today.
Wow.
Pretty remarkable when you think about it.
And they'll be ahead in the loss column.
They will. Yes. They right now, if this holds, Baltimore will be 2 back in the win column, 2 ahead in the loss column. So they would be ahead technically of Tampa Bay on percentage points. But what a run this has been for Baltimore. You had a thought earlier that in the week that potentially Ohtani could be a dark horse candidate to go to Baltimore.
Well, yeah, just because they've got the draft picks the players in the farm system and the capital, but I tell you what, if you're the Rays, I would make the move as well. To me right now, I get Atlanta's playing extremely well, but I would be all in. I would take the risk. I think it's worth it at this point in time to be able to take a shot and go at winning the World Series this year, because outside of Atlanta, they don't have that frontline pitching that you're worried about. You know, it's not like you're sitting there with the way Blake Snell and Joe Musgrove are pitching right now that you're facing those types of starters. Sure. So I would go for it if I could get an Ohtani.
No point on resting on your laurels with how good the teams at the top are this year in Major League Baseball. Orioles win is about a consensus $1.25 underdog over 9 there with Dean Kramer and the Orioles beating Julio Urias and the Dodgers. We'll have more baseball thoughts in a little bit. We continue our Big 12 football previews, though, for this 2023 season. We've already talked about the teams at the top of them all. 3 teams, single digits on the odds board. Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas State. What about a couple of Texas schools who are in that mid-teens range? TCU expected to have a drop-off after their magical run to the national title game, 16-1. And there's the Red Raiders in Lubbock at 12-1. Amal, you bullish on either of those two teams in that sort of attractive mid-tier pricing? They're a pseudo-long shot, but odds makers at least view them to be competitive on paper this year.
Yeah, they do, but I'm not necessarily buying Texas Tech at 12-1. I feel like that number's a little bit short on them. That's not a team right now that I would be looking to bet. TCU is interesting. They're going to have, you know, right now there's some question marks at quarterback. They've got Chandler Morris, who's an Oklahoma transfer. You've got Josh Hoover's a kid that they've recruited. And then you've got Chance Nolan, Oregon State transfer as well. So it'll be wide open in terms of where they go with the quarterback position. But They add in receivers like JoJo Earl from Alabama. This team offensively is going to be pretty good under Sonny Dykes. Gillespie, the defensive coordinator, obviously didn't have two particularly good games in the college football playoff. They've got to get better on the defensive side of the ball, Ben. That's an area I have serious concerns with right now with the Horned Frogs. Because you talked about it earlier. In this league, we know people can score the football. And if you can't defend, you're going to be, you don't have to be great defensively, but you have to at least be competent. And right now, I have some concerns about TCU defensively. They do have a ton of starters back on defense. They've got 8 starters back from last year's team. Offensively, a big drop-off with only 3 starters returning. But I still think with Dykes, he's such a good offensive coach. And they open with Colorado, which is a great game for them at home. Nichols, and then they go to Houston. Dana Holgerson's team season win total sitting about 4.5. A lot of question marks surrounding the Cougars this year. SMU in the Skillet game at home this year. You get the Mounties, who, by the way, how Neil Brown still has a job in Morgantown,
I have no idea.
Look, I grew up in a time where the Mounties played for a national championship against Notre Dame. Pat White and Steve Slayton is one of the best combinations of tailback and quarterback I've ever seen. And this program has just taken an absolute nosedive now in terms of where they're at. So for me, the Mounties are another one where they can win. I think TCU could be a lot better than people realize just because of the amount of time they have to ramp up and get ready. And the schedule works out nicely. Yes, you go to Ames. It's never easy going into Ames. But I think this team can be dangerous as long as they get consistency at the quarterback position.
It is a somewhat lazy narrative to go, well, there was a team that came out of nowhere, made a run to the playoffs, so they just have to regress and be bad this next year. That doesn't have to work out that way. 7.5, by the way, is the win total juiced over at -130.
Yeah, I don't know. You look, you can argue against it, but they do. The schedule on the back half gets really, really challenging. Ben, the last 5 weeks of the season, at Kansas State, never an easy game. Up in Lubbock, as I mentioned, they play a ton of tight games with the Red Raiders. Then you got the Horns down in Austin the following week, Baylor in at home, and then you close out in Norman. And I tell you what, historically, when Gary Patterson was there, this team has had success against the Sooners when Oklahoma was far more talented. Mm-hmm. But I just think that the back half of the schedule is going to be challenging. The 7.5 is a tricky number. And like I said, you can make the argument for an under, you can make the argument for an over. But to me, if the confidence is there and they can steal these games at Kansas State, will be tough. But at Texas Tech and the Baylor games, even the Texas game at home is very winnable. They've dominated the Horns for the last 10 years. So an opportunity for them in this rivalry there.
The first two Big 12 games in the conference against West Virginia, who's 150-1, and Houston 200-1, the two longest shots in the Big 12. Real quick, Amal, the one other team that's sub 20-1 is the Baylor Bears, who were a popular preseason pick last year. Got off to a solid start and then just fell apart under Dave Aranda as the head coach. Lost their final 3 in Big 12 play, lost the bowl game to finish 6-7. What sort of shot do you give to the Bears this year at 18-1?
Well, look, I like the Dave Aranda as a coach. I think overall, if they can be patient there, and it's never an easy place to recruit to simply because Baylor's just not the most exciting place for a student athlete to go to, but they've done a nice job in the past. We saw what Art Briles was capable of doing. They go to Utah. It's a non-con game, so you can throw that out the schedule. But remember, they play Texas. That's not that far away. Those two schools, obviously Baylor, that's an opportunity to play big brother. That game is at home at McLean, so that's a good opportunity for them. You get Texas Tech at home, Iowa State at home. The road games that are tougher at Kansas State and at TCU later in the season, not bad. You got Blake Shapen back under center. Richard Reese also at the tailback position. I like this Baylor team in the sense that they could be a team that can pick off some teams you don't expect. I don't think they can compete for the league title, but they're going to be more challenging when you're TCU and you're Kansas State and look at that Baylor game at home. You go, oh, we should win that game. Yes, you should win, but doesn't mean you're going to win that game. I think this team could wreak some havoc in certain spots. 7-5, 6-6, things break perfectly well. 8-4, if they have a bad season, they go 5-7.
Yeah, it's a win total at 7 over -120. I wouldn't have a ton of interest in betting. Should point out, though, that Utah game is at home, and it's an 11 a.m. Central kick at McLean Stadium. So,
well, Utes, remember, they're in the Mountain Time Zone, so 10 o'clock start for them. Right. But I'm going to tell you, Utah, I think it's like a ridiculous 35-1 to go undefeated. I think the Utes have a shot. Cam Rising is back. This team is dangerous. Whittingham is one of the best coaches in college football, for my money. I think he played at BYU. And then he coached at Utah he's been there since 2005. He's not going anywhere, but that's a guy that I would have always looked to for a long time to hire away.
And you'd think if there's any coach would have his team prepared for that early start time, it would be him, Kyle Whittingham, and Utah. So Baylor 18-1 sitting there.
Real quick, I know we're talking Big 12, but I just want to go back to Utah. You get the Gators at home. They're going to be about a 10-point favorite. I think that one is what the number is. They should beat the Gators. at Baylor, a winnable game. You got UCLA at home. You're playing at about 3,500 feet. Rice-Eccles, in my opinion, outside of Autzen, is probably currently the best home field advantage in the Pac-12. When the Huskies are going, no better place than Seattle to play. You cannot hear yourself thinking Husky Stadium. And there's another place. If you've never been, the best aesthetics in college football, nothing better than Lake Washington and Husky Stadium at 12:30 on a Pac-12 kickoff there. And then you got USC on the 21st. That's going to be the game. Back-to-back, you get SC at home, then Oregon comes calling. If they can win those games back-to-back, sure, they got a chance. I'm not worried about going up to Seattle. I know everyone loves Michael Penix. I'm not as high on him. Their receiving core is tremendous. Top three receiving core, in my opinion, in college football at UW. But I still think the physicality of this Utes team, they're a dangerous team.
I'm all out on the Washington Huskies, as you like to say.
Look, they're a good team. They could be 9-3, 10-2, but I just think that Utah and SC are better than them.
A lot of hype as well on that offseason. Just to kind of tie the knot here on the rest of the Big 12, we look at some of the longer shots. Oh, no, you're good. Yeah. I'm curious how you view these newcomers, how they will look in the Big 12 in year number one in the conference. UCF sitting 35-1, BYU 80-1, Cincinnati now with Scott Satterfield taking over at head coach is 120-1. What are your expectations for that grouping? Odds makers certainly don't believe much in the way of actually competing to win the title.
Yeah, you know what? To me right now, when you look at these teams, let's start with Cincinnati. I think they're going to be in serious peril this year only because they just don't have the talent on the team right now. That's the biggest concern I have when you look at them. They're just, the cupboard is bare. Luke Fickell obviously leaves to go to Wisconsin. That's going to be a huge blow in terms of where this Bearcats team is. The other thing you mentioned, UCF. Look, they're a solid team in the American Conference, but now you're stepping up in competition. You're going on the road every week. It's not going to be easy when you look at this team in terms of what they're able to do. But I like Gus Malzahn as a coach. I think he can be really dangerous in terms of what his teams do. And he's a guy that's going to – the problem I have with Gus Malzahn is they're going to lose a game that they should win, and they're going to win a game they should lose. That's what you're going to get out of UCF at certain times throughout the course of the season. But again, they're still a little bit ways away, but they're going to have an advantage. They're going to be able to start recruiting in other places maybe they didn't in the past, which is Texas. You still get to live in Orlando and Central Florida, great weather. And then you've got that spread offense that Malzahn runs. I think offensively, you can say whatever you want about him defensively, inefficiencies, but they're still an elite team offensively. And remember, he took Auburn to a national championship game. They did lose to Florida State, but they're not there yet. Right now, to be able to compete, if you're Sarkisian, this is your league to win. There's nobody that's overwhelming. I think Kansas State's dangerous. Oklahoma, it can be dangerous. But I think potentially we're looking at a Big 12 title game of Texas and K-State.
I like the K-State number more than anything. Over 8.5 plus 140. The issue with betting UCF, it's 6.5 on the win total, but you got to lay $1.75 in juice. Yeah. Moving to a new conference, that's not a situation I want to take on. Headstrong there with head coach Gus Malzahn. Our breakdown of the Big 12 is complete. We'll transition one more NFL preview for you today. That is the Green Bay Packers of the NFC North. We'll discuss next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide is coming in just a couple weeks. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. This offer ends July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Did you know, Mo, we're down to 50 days from now till week one kicking off? Lions Chiefs.
Yeah, I was going to say it had to be NFL. I mean, no.
I'm a big NFL countdown guy.
I'm like, the countdown is for Saturday, August 26th.
I'm aware. I'm just giving you it's a tertiary countdown this year. And with our producer, Wyatt Tomczyk, behind the glass, Wyatt wanted to make sure we get this NFL preview in today, Amal, since Wyatt will not be with us tomorrow, back on Friday. We welcome into the show now, Amal, Green Bay Packer owner Wyatt Tomczyk. Wow, what an honor this is, Wyatt. Thank you for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule there with all that Packer ownership duties.
You know, it's tough to balance, you know, the day-to-day operations to make sure one of the best organizations in all of professional sports, you know, runs smoothly. And I'm really happy that we're doing this with two Bears fans downstairs working that are probably just yelling at me. Not on the comms, of course, but It warms my heart that Jeremy and Matt Hicks are working.
During the break of all, I'd asked if I had shares, since I'm from Wisconsin, and yeah. I said, no, I didn't really want to sit next to a sweaty guy named Bob from Appleton in the bleachers at Lambeau during the summer shareholder meeting.
Use the city that you used.
Oh, I said Oconomowoc.
There you go. That's a true
Wisconsin. I got friends in Oconomowoc. I didn't want to rip on, Appleton is a little bit more.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say he changed the name, but I didn't know the name of the other city, so I couldn't call him
out.
Here's
the thing. I have just like 90 Wisconsin cities floating in my name at any one given moment of them all. So you might hear me throw out a Kakana from time to time or an Oosberg. I just,
I was so happy. I had to go to Wisconsin for a wedding years ago. And on the ride back to the airport to Milwaukee, it was early in the morning. So we had to pick up somebody in Oshkosh. Sheboygan. Because that was great always city. My example, right? Like,
Sheboygan.
What do you got? Like a wife and two kids, and you're from Sheboygan? That was like my example for everything. I was like, finally made it to Sheboygan.
I love just getting more obscure and obscure. So that's like the real Wisconsinites. When I start throwing out, Oconto, that's when they're like, all right, or Pembin, That's when you really get crazy. So anyway, the Green Bay Packers, I'm always looking at me like I'm just a psycho. 7.5 is the win total for this year. Everyone wants to know how Jordan Love do in his first year as a starter. Amal, first off, as far as the QB position goes for the Packers, what are your expectations as far as Love?
I don't know. And that's the thing. There's a lot of conversation around this team. I think if you're ever going to take a shot on a wild card, right, they're +180 to make the playoffs. I think it's a good bet in this sense. We don't know what Jordan Love is. And if he's good and if he's consistent, then this team can be dangerous. Overall, when I look at this team, there's still talent on this roster. I know last year they had a drop off. They didn't play particularly well, but, they've got one of the best still. When you look at Jaire Alexander, arguably the best cover corner or top five cover. I get it if you want to make a case for Patrick Surtain or the kid down in Miami, Jalen Ramsey. But to me, I like the addition of Luke Musgrave at tight end. That guy's going to be tough in short yardage situation. You maybe put him in the backfield. Jaden Reed as well. I'm not as high on Christian Watson as Aaron Rodgers was, but Romeo Doubs, I like him a lot. The offensive line, if they can stay healthy. By the way, I feel like Bakhtiari's injured every other day.
Sure.
If this offensive line stays healthy with Runyon, with Myers, they could be pretty dangerous. Are you guys Aaron Jones fans?
Yeah, of course.
Love. I mean,
are you being facetious or are you being serious?
No, Aaron Jones is a great,
tremendous,
great two-way.
Great.
Back.
He's solid. You guys are talking about this guy like he's Amon Green.
We love some Amon Green.
That's a good argument.
He's no Sam Congato, okay? Let's just get that out of the way, all right?
But Aaron Jones is such a great pass catcher out of the backfield. They can line him up in the slot or outside. I think what Aaron Jones brings is a great, I would say, three-way back because he's a good pass blocker as well.
I like Aaron Jones, but by the way, the reason why I brought up Amon Green, I think he was criminally underrated when he was in Green Bay. I don't realize people, until you look at his stats, realize how good he was. I like Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, but to me, a lot of times, guys, their effectiveness so many times can be benefited by playing with someone like Aaron Rodgers.
Sure. You can make that case, though, for the entire offensive roster. The offensive line, that's a big question, right? Where Zach Tom got a lot of time at left tackle when Bakhtiari was out injured. Now he moves to right tackle, and you could say, all right, well, can you ding them because Rodgers got rid of the ball so quick? I would counter by saying, is there two more factors more important to a young quarterback coming into the league and taking over starting quarterback than the strength of his O-line and the running backs to complement him? And with Green Bay, Jordan Love has that. With an O-line where if you get health from Bakhtiari, that is a top 10 unit. The combination of A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones is a legit top 10 unit as well in the running back department. You're going to have to take a leap of faith on the development of Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs at that wide receiver position, plus what you're adding in a Luke Musgrave at tight end. But I at least believe that the pieces are there for Love to have success. Now that he's been in the system for a few years, this is not some rookie coming out from Utah State day one who is completely green like we saw him in that COVID season filling in at Arrowhead Stadium. So there are reasons to believe in the offense being better than people would think.
Look, I think at 4-1, they're a good bet to win the division. The one thing is, if you take the Cleveland Browns in the AFC and the Green Bay Packers in the NFC, to me, are the two teams, if they won their respective divisions or they made a postseason push and got in, would not be a surprise because I think the talent is there. With the Browns, it's a question of whether Watson could put it together consistently. With the Packers, it's how does Jordan Love develop and what does he do once he has that ability? And I don't know if it was you or Wyatt that made the point a second ago. You said he's been in the system. He's had some opportunities there. Now, if he can implement that and be effective, I think this team could be really dangerous. And one of the things that benefits this Packers team at 4-1, we're talking about the Detroit Lions like they're the 85 Bears.
I know.
I mean, look, they played well down the stretch. Yes, they did beat Green Bay, but that Packers team already looked disengaged in that matchup. I don't know. I'm not ready to go crazy with them. The one, you know, Minnesota at 275. Minnesota, what were they? 13-4 last year? I mean, we're talking about the Vikings like they're going to be 4-13 this year. Plus 275 to win this division. You mentioned it a couple days ago. The Detroit Lions are still the Detroit Lions. Let's not act like, you know, hey, they're coming off five straight division titles, you know, four Super Bowl. I mean, what have they done?
This is not the Wayne Font, Barry Sanders-led Detroit Lions that were last able to win a division back in the year 1993.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made on the Vikings or the Packers, even the Bears. I would say Bears a little bit less, but I think Justin Fields has the greatest upside of any player in this division, including Jordan Love. I don't know. I don't think you really go wrong. Even if the bet doesn't win, I think the Vikings and the Packers to win their respective division is not a bad bet at all. The concern I have with Minnesota is you lose Za'Darius Smith, you lose Dalvin Cook. But with this Green Bay team, if Jordan Love is consistent, you mentioned, I was looking at Brooks, Aaron Jones' numbers. You guys are correct. You guys are absolutely right. I was wrong. He's got a career 5.1 yards per carry average. Yep. This guy's effective. And, you know, maybe it's just certain times, maybe I'm looking at a little bit more of a smaller sample size. I know you guys follow the Packers closer than I do. But I'm a big Rodgers guy, and so that's why I ding them with Love a little bit. But overall, their talent is on par with anybody else in the division when you look at the 21 players. I mean, they're still solid defensively. They were a little bit inconsistent. You know, you go back 2 years ago when they lost to the 49ers. That was not on the defense. That was on the offense.
Special teams, too.
So, yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is they're still solid. They don't have to be great. It's not like you look there and you go, dude, we got Mahomes, Joe Burrow, and Josh Allen in this division.
You really count what you count on the defense is Rashawn Gary getting back to form after a torn ACL. You count on Kenny Clark, who's had a bit of a decline in production at times, getting back to a measure he was earlier in the career. If he's able to improve on some of the things in the trenches there. But it is interesting to note that a lot of respected money has come in on the Packers as that long shot in the division. Just viewing that there are a lot of outcomes that could happen in the NFC North. Packers were at 1.5-1. They've been bet down to 4-1, co-third choice there with Chicago this year. The one other thing I'm curious too is how the offense from a tempo standpoint looks them all, because like Aaron Rodgers dictated the tempo of that offense last year. It was the slowest one in the league from a snap-to-snap perspective. With Matt LaFleur as a play caller, you have Jordan Love, who ran a lot of up-tempo at Utah State, has been in the system now. Will they be willing to try to give opposing defenses a different look and go, you know what, let's not just hold the ball for 40 seconds every play. Let's get on the ball. Let's try to do different things, keep defenses off balance. That's the one wrinkle that people aren't really considering with what Love can bring.
No, you're absolutely right. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach it. And you mentioned, you know, this team and what they're capable with Love under center. The one thing I like is this team opens at the Bears, winnable game. I think they're about a 2.5, maybe a 3-point dog. They're at the Falcons, very winnable game. You get the Saints at home, good spot. And then you get the Lions on a Thursday Night Football. So, Ben, I'm not saying that they've got to be 4-0 to open, but this team has a chance, and if you bet them at 4-1, and these division odds are continuously fluctuating throughout the course of the season, you can be in a situation where you put yourself in a position to be at least profitable or break even on it, and then kind of free roll the Packers to a potential division title. I'm not suggesting this team is going to be great, but I think in a division that has a lot of question marks and a ton of uncertainty, I think Green Bay at 4-1 is not a bad look.
That's a great point to make, especially about the schedule early on. Week six bye, there will be over under 45,000 cheeseheads at Allegiant Stadium come week 5, Monday Night Football. That's another thing you got to consider.
Why? There are no more flights out of Green Bay or Madison or Milwaukee?
That's only
going to be 45,000. When Bucky Badger used to play here against UNLV, the whole stadium was filled with Wisconsin.
And that's when Wyatt knows that's when UNLV would use it for their team photo because the stadium was packed and it was full of Badger red, but nobody could tell the difference. Hour number two in the books here on VSiN Sharp Money. Zach Cohen, VSiN writer and editor, joins us right after the break.